Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Michelle Endegicello is a 10-time Grammy nominee who is a multi-hyphenate. So many, we could be here for 5 minutes. Her bass skills are legendary, and her work as a vocalist is often bold, like on her hit, If That's Your Boyfriend, He Wasn't Last Night. It can also be quite beautiful, like on Fool of Me.
Say that you don't care, but we made love. Tell me why.
So who inspires an artist like this? Well, another artist known for being bold and beautiful, James Baldwin. In 2016, Michelle Endegicello created a stage musical called Can I Get a Witness? The Gospel of James Baldwin at Harlem Stage. It was inspired by The Fire Next Time, James Baldwin's incisive essays about race in America. On Monday evening, Michelle Endegicello will be performing at the McDowell Colony Benefit at Gotham Hall, paying tribute to James Baldwin, who was a McDowell Fellow. Michelle Endegicello is joining us. She's just gotten in from Australia. So you're a superstar for even getting here. Thanks for being in studio.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
When did you first discover James Baldwin?
About 12 years ago, very recently. But I think the real discovery came when I was asked to do the piece for the Harlem Stage, which is about 4 years ago, where people started gifting me books, and I read The Fire the next time, like 3 times in a row. And so that was the awakening, I'd say, then.
What was it about it that made you read it 3 times in a row?
I think at that moment in time, I was struggling with reconciling things that had happened in my family's life, in my family history. I was born in 1968, and my parents lived through a time that I cannot imagine. And so the book was one of the very few things in literature or in theater or in music which resembled very much what I experienced. And I like how he's also from the church, and it was written in that way, like a psalm or an admonition, a warning. It just spoke to me in a way, and at the same time helped me analyze and deal with what I was experiencing and what my parents experienced, which has caused a lot of pain. But now I wasn't as angry at my parents. It allowed me to see that there was a system put in place that has affected many, you know, both black and white.
We're a similar vintage, and my parents, my mom was from D.C. too, and, you know, they went to segregated schools.
Yep.
And the segregated schools at a time, some of them were good, but then once desegregation happened officially on paper, not in real life, so many of the black schools got starved out for resources and financing, and then the neighborhoods the same thing.
Yeah, so it was difficult, and I remember my life changed in fifth grade. To go from we lived in Old Town Alexandria, which was, for lack of a better word, and only in hindsight, I had resources. Mm-hmm. I could go to the library, I could walk around, I felt free. And then moving into a much more urban neighborhood in Maryland, closer to D.C., and my whole life changed, you know. And I watched my parents' life change. My father was in the military, and he would watch people rise in rank and wonder, you know, that caused issues. The way Baldwin talks about the power of education, not to disparage my mother, she only had a fourth grade education. So I went from this place where I had access to things to a neighborhood where the value systems were different, and he talks about that in the book. It's his, you know, letter to his nephew to warn him, but also to discuss with him the things that you will encounter, you know, to fit into society, to deal with your suffering, to deal with the racism you may encounter, the classism you may encounter. And then, just really, it was a life changer. And then just reading about his creative process and wanting to be more than just a Black writer, just a great writer, just really inspired me, changed my life.
Well, for folks who haven't ever heard James Baldwin talk about the fire, next time, we have a little clip that I found online. Let's listen to James Baldwin in his own words.
But, I was a child. You know, when a child opens his eyes in the world, he has to use what he sees. There's nothing else to use. And you are formed by what you see, the choices you have to make, and the way you discover what it means to be Black in New York. I don't know how you discover what it means to be Black in London, but I know what it means, how you discover that in New York, and then throughout the entire country. And I know how, as you grow older, you watch in the richest city in the world, you know, and the most famous, the richest, freest nation in the world, in the Western world, I know how you watch as you grow older, literally, and this is not a figure of speech, the corpses of your brothers and your sisters pile up around you, and not for anything they have done. They were too young to have done anything.
That was James Baldwin in his own words talking about the fire next time. My guest is Michelle Endiguocello. She is going to be paying tribute to James Baldwin at the McDowell Colony Benefit on Monday. We'll talk about that in a minute. When you first started working on the stage play of Can I Get a Witness about James Baldwin with his work, what was your goal?
I don't call it a play. I think it's a multidisciplined performance piece. That sounds not too lofty and arrogant.
No, it just sounds specific.
Yeah, I wanted to use the trope of the church service. If you listen to a lot of my early recordings, you can tell I struggle with issues of faith coming from that environment. And so, but now here I am, I'm 50, I'm starting to try to have a different point of view towards that experience, and I do like how it creates community and discomfort, and a place for people to gather together and have a cathartic experience. The first time we ever performed it, it was right after the election of the one who shall always remain nameless. And so it functioned as a town hall, as a funeral service for some, for a moment in time they remember, and then also served as a just a place where you could voice your hostilities, but also your love. It was a place where we could all just gather and remind each other that it's this community aspect of humanity that will keep us, I think, safe, I hope, inshallah.
Something you said at the top of your answer is interesting. You said that now that I'm 50,
yeah.
What do you think about it is about these sort of milestones, about reaching middle age? I know there's things that I've really reconsidered and thought about how I want to spend, you know, I've been on the planet longer than I'll probably be on the planet moment. What is it about that moment for you that is helping you either in terms of creativity or being more open to things in the universe, being more open to ideas that in the past you had it was like a hard no or a hard yes about something?
Yeah, I used to be pretty dogmatic. chance and time allow you to make and forge friendships, that hopefully cultivate within you empathy. Mm-hmm. And even when you're gaining knowledge, hopefully what you're gaining allows you to sift through some of the stuff you might need to set aside. And I think I've just had a lot of time and disruption and failures and successes that I'm not a dinosaur. I'm going to see the meteor coming. you know. So that's where I think I'm hoping I'm getting to.
As you were bringing this piece of work to life, Can I Get a Witness? I think it's easy to understand what about Baldwin's work would lend itself to being in any multidisciplinary piece. What is challenging about it, his work, bringing it into a different form?
Oh, well, this sounds arrogant. This piece has many creators. First, I'll start there. And I don't see it as that. I try to keep the text where it is, and mm-hmm. I keep it exact. I just do interpolations, or I work through music. I think that's my language. But I have Charlotte Braithwaite, amazing director, Toshi Regan, songwriter, and also was in the very first performance, and her oratory and ability to bring people into moment was incredible. Justin Hicks, who's probably, I think, just one of the greatest songwriters in every genre you could ever meet. And we all together just try to, again, I say, use the church service. And what Baldwin does in The Fire the Next Time, and I say, I hate when I just did that, because I don't know what he did. That's what I'm saying. What I gather from the book is that it worked for me like some people read the Bible or the Quran. It just allowed, if I just sat with the book and read the text as is and just would take it in, I found that it was soothing. So I just made music from that. And I think that's the thing he liked about the church, he says. You know, it's just about the music and the gathering that brings you solace. And there's an art in that. There's like something mystical and unexplainable, ineffable in that. And so that's what I try to focus on. But I'm surrounded by geniuses who allow me just to do that while they, you know, do all the heavy work of bringing his words to a place where they translate to others, you know.
My guest is Michelle Endigiocello. Michelle will be performing at the McDowell Colony Benefit on May 6th, and it is a tribute to James Baldwin.
Yeah.
What do you have planned?
Oh, my God. I'm so grateful to McDowell, because this is where he began Giovanni's Room, Another Country, which I just reread. It's an amazing book. It's really been giving me some heart pain, some things I got to deal with. It's places like McDowell that allow just your talent to provide a space for you to be, where you can have food and lodging and a safe place, or maybe it's a harsh place. They do critique you there, I heard, where you can sit and do your craft. And so I feel very honored to play a piece from this Baldwin experience, just to show that amazing structure allowed this amazing man to create works that, for me, have been just life-changing, mind-altering, soul-shifting, and I'm grateful.
Those an artist colonies, it's in New Hampshire, and I'm interested in just you as an artist, what it would mean to an artist and the effect it could have on an artist just to have that time and space.
Oh, I love New York. I love it here, and I've lived a lot of places. But I have to leave this place in order to hear my own thoughts and to see the light and to eat a meal without rushing to the next thing and perhaps sharing a glass of wine with someone else who's in a similar struggle, but maybe with a piece of music. And so you don't feel so alone. Or at the same time, that maybe you need that aloneness to find something that is hard for you to reconcile with, that you need to put on the page. And so can you imagine that people, there's a place and a space that allows you to have this? It's a gift. It's a gift. We just heard Patti Smith talking about being an artist in New York. You know, that's changing so much here. Mm-hmm. I find it very hard to be creative here, or to find the spaces to do that. And so, like, McDowell actually, I wouldn't even say it's a gift. It's hopefully one of the the spaces we have on this planet that will continue this conversation about being human, you know?
I know a lot of artists and musicians listen to this show because they're in their studios and they're working, or yeah, they're on the way to auditions or onto shows. I'm curious, for someone who's just starting out, you're at a place where you can stop and look back on your career. What is, this is a really simple question, piece of advice, something that a young artist might want to consider or think about as they're making their way.
Oh, okay. I'll give you an example. You introduced me, and the first song you say is, you know, with this song, "If That's Your Boyfriend, He Wasn't Last Night." And I look back and I'm like, wow, that's the song, that's the first out of all the songs I've written. That's the one. And I look back and I don't think I had nuance as a lyricist yet. And it's a complicated song. So I'd say my advice to an artist is, everything you do, if you decide to take your shirt off in that video, it's all on you. You have no one to blame but yourself. And if you decide, like, I take, you know, why are most of my album covers, why does the female artist have to have this, you know, certain sultry vibe? Or you might find yourself doing things that you, I don't know, later on, just make sure you're okay with them. You know, I don't believe in regrets, but just make sure that things are out there now for for a lot of people forever.
Well, I know.
So that's all I'd say. And that's why I'm excited about Baldwin. I'm seeing that I want to make things like, I don't care if you like it, but I want to make things that, I don't know, will age and die gracefully, you know?
You've built a career as a working musician. That's something a lot of people aspire to, almost more than stardom or fame. Like, just, you actually do your work, you do your craft, you live your life, you do your work.
Yeah.
Was there some decision you made along the way that led you that way? Or some point when it could have gone another way and you just decided, I'm not taking that job, I'm not working with that producer, I turned down that.
I feel the presence of something that I know guides me, and it's like I learned to trust myself. I learned to trust my instincts, and I also learned to deal with the consequences, and that everything isn't good or bad. It's opaque, you know, not better than less than, you know. I think that's a lesson that goes through all the teachings, like. I try to stay away from that with myself, and lately I'm really like, why are we so hard on one another? And I just had a moment where I was like, wow, I've really learned to beat up on myself and others, I think music makes you self-absorbed. I think it can cause some mental illness between either jet lag and the constant trying to appease and please. It creates something in you that you have to have a reckoning with yourself, and you make a choice.
As you said, you got jet lag. You just came in from Australia. It's not stopping you. You're going back out on the road with Andrew Bird.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about that. I'm so excited to be, yeah.
He's pretty great. We had him on our second live show downstairs in the green space. He performed pieces off his new release, and he was talking about
work.
My finest work. It was very interesting him talking about recording it in a studio, live to tape. You know, not siloed in booths. And Rhiannon Giddens, I talked to her just the other way, and she did the same thing with this new thing. This idea of, we're all performing together, and there's some sort of energy there. Are you in that camp?
Oh, yeah. I score Queen Sugar that way. I get to do that when we play live. When we play live, there's no set list. It's a creative experience that I get to have with three people I love. And I'm so grateful for that. It's funny, when I met Andrew Bird, sadly, we were somewhere and it was loud, so I couldn't really talk to him, or have like a real conversation. So I look forward to meeting him.
He's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Queen Sugar to come back.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And it's a beautiful show.
Oh, I appreciate
that. Don't you,
you
think?
That.
I mean, it really is. I'm going to make you agree with me,
yes,
Diane.
No, yeah, yeah. Ava makes beautiful things, beautiful images.
Yes. Michelle Indeghiacello will be performing at the McDowell Colony Benefit on May 6th. We're going to let you go. Get some sleep.
Oh,
you got a performance.
I was so happy to meet you, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
It was a pleasure. And come on back next time you have something new.
Thanks.
Or not. Just come back.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming up after the break, actor Raul Castillo will be in studio to talk about his new film, El Chicano. More after a quick break. This is All of It.